This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney. Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf wants to get more Oakland residents into police uniforms. She made the statement earlier this month at the launch of a new pre-police academy class at Merritt College, taught by former Oakland Police Chief Howard Jordan. The goal of the class is to help get local students familiar with life as an officer and steer more local residents into the department. Only 9% of Oakland police actually live in the city right now. And it's not just a local phenomenon. It's true for cities around the country. But what to do about it is complicated. We've got a story from our friends at the podcast Life of the Law. Here, Andrew Stelzer brings us this piece about commuting cops.
Cruising the streets of Deep East Oakland, Officer Charles Stone seems to know just about everyone he sees.
Cop Smurf!
Hey, how we doing?
Where you been at?
Yo, where you been? Right?
Say what?
They closed school down Friday.
Friday and Monday.
Ain't nobody told me a damn thing. Where were you hiding at?
I was at home with Mama.
Well, this here is 82nd and MacArthur was right there. So we're up on Ney Street, which is where my school is at, where Parker Elementary is. And I'll tell you this, the reason for my presence at this school is because the neighborhood is so infested with crime.
How are you?
All right, yourself?
Doing well, thank you.
You a cop for our area?
I'm a cop for this school.
There's been, you know, multiple people shot, you know, there's drive-by shootings more often than we'd care for, you know, major narcotics activity out of these apartments up here, directly across from our elementary school, where you have drug dealing and drug activity and narcotics activity, you have the potential for violence.
Stone works for the Oakland Police Department as a school resource officer. He joined the force 15 years ago. It was a decision made with intent.
I am from here, from Oakland. Five generations of my family have been born and raised in Oakland. So it's a city that I'm absolutely proud of, and my family still lives here.
Stone's well over 6 feet tall, clean cut. He's wearing his sunglasses on the backside of his head. The neighborhood he's currently assigned to isn't the area he grew up in, but it's still part of his hometown turf.
It's kind of nice to be from here because I have a certain amount of pride in being a police officer in the city that I'm from and the city that my family is from.
Only 9% of Oakland's police officers live in Oakland. That's pretty low, but it's not an anomaly. Around the country, other cities, big and small, face the same challenges. In Miami, 7% of the city's police force live within the city limits. In Minneapolis and Ferguson, Missouri, it's around 6%.
How do you do community policing with people who don't live in the community?
John Penny is a criminologist at Southern University at New Orleans. But he's not just an academic. He spent 16 years as a juvenile probation and parole officer, a job that took him to virtually every corner of the city he still calls home.
Normally, under normal circumstances, you protect the things that you you would protect it better if you have to live in it. If you don't, then it may become just a job to you. If you live outside the city, your loyalty and dedication or commitment might not be as great.
Residency requirements, rules that required cops to live in the city they patrolled, were common around the turn of the 20th century. But they weren't originally designed to recruit dedicated cops. Descendant from English law, the requirements were a way for politicians to maintain power by doling out jobs to people living in their districts. In fact, police reformers were against the requirements because of the nepotism and corruption involved. But things turned around during the civil rights era, and residency requirements became a racial and economic issue. Andrew Flowers is the quantitative editor of 538.com, a data-driven news site. That's the site run by election prediction guru Nate Silver.
These residency requirement ideas were instituted in the 1970s and the 1960s out of like an environment of, you know, white flight, the middle class leaving to the suburbs.
Suddenly, the idea of mostly white police officers patrolling inner city neighborhoods of color during the day, then escaping to their suburban communities at night, didn't sound so great.
And the motivations behind these residency requirement ideas seem sensible, right? You know, you want to keep tax money in the city, you want to improve the resident police relations.
Local governments in Chicago, Denver, and dozens of other cities have laws requiring their officers to live within city limits. Some of these laws include other emergency responders like firefighters, citing the notion that they need to live close by in case of an emergency. Other requirements, like Boston's, cover all local government employees. In practically every case, there's been resistance from law enforcement agents who say these residency rules restrict their freedom of movement. In 1976, a Philadelphia firefighter took the issue all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Despite the fire department's residency requirement, he wanted to move out of town. But he lost the case and lost his job. The court rejected the argument that anyone had a constitutional right to be employed by any particular city. The Fraternal Order of Police, or FOP, has been a consistent opponent of residency requirements. Retired Nashville, Tennessee police commander Bob Nash worked with the local and national FOP.
You don't have to live in Nashville. You just don't have to be a policeman here in Nashville is kind of the philosophy of the courts. It's really not an issue that you can take to court and be successful. It's really a political issue.
In 1994, Nashville's city council voted to get rid of its residency requirement. Nash said that campaign succeeded by arguing that a larger geographic area equals a larger talent pool to hire officers from.
They say in the case of Nashville, if you lived in a bedroom community like Franklin or Brentwood or Mount Juliet, there's some very, very good candidates there for the job. You know, oftentimes people would get married. A wife or a husband might have property already or a home already outside the county, so that means you're going to end up having to move. So people really wanted the freedom to move where they wished and still be employed here.
When Hurricane Katrina and the floods that followed ravaged New Orleans, throngs of police and other first responders left the city, and there was a shortage of housing. So the city suspended its residency requirement. In the decades since, there's been difficulty generating a pool of qualified applicants from within the city limits. So in 2014, the requirement was removed altogether.
We were, as they say, bleeding blue.
Even police reform activists like Yvette Theory didn't fight very hard to keep New Orleans law on the books.
I mean, I understand from their perspective that they were just trying to, you know, get more recruits or whatever. But being a native and someone who grew up in this city, I think residency is very important to the police department.
Theory says there's already a level of wariness about police in New Orleans. Her mentally ill brother-in-law ended up dead after a 911 call. Her son has been stopped by the police several times for what she says was driving while black.
We did a survey back in 2007 where overwhelmingly people said they didn't trust the police. That hasn't changed. People still don't trust the police. And now you bringing people outside the community and putting badges on them. So where, you know, how the trust level going to go up when you're allowing outsiders to come in and police other people's community with no investment?
One of the ideas behind residency requirements is that they will help create a police force as diverse as the citizens of the city they patrol. But Andrew Flowers from 538.com looked at the numbers and found out that might not be happening.
Going into this study, me and the co-author thought, hey, I assume that this has a positive effect on police diversity. So it was a little surprising that the data didn't back it up.
Flowers analyzed the 75 largest police departments in the U.S. to see whether those with residency requirements had a more racially representative police force. Meaning, for example, if your city's population was 40% Black and 30% Asian, the police force would mirror those same numbers, 40% Black and 30% Asian. So against all conventional wisdom, they found that police departments that required officers to live in the city they patrol actually had less diverse police forces.
One of the things we found is diversity does help. It seems like there is a correlation between the more diverse a police department is, the better there's a reduction in police misconduct, and there's more trust from the community towards the police force.
Flowers' study found that having that diversity on the police force creates a kind of institutional change.
The culture changes, right? It becomes less insular, it's open to community feedback, etc. So we found lots of researchers who had documented this relationship between diversity and better police-community relations. But what we weren't able to find is that research that proved that residency requirements were a way to get that diversity.
Like any good statistician, Flowers is careful to distinguish between correlation and causation. He thinks the diversity issues existed before the residency requirements, so the rules didn't cause a lack of diversity, but those requirements also didn't solve the problem or reduce the distrust. That's likely one reason that Black Lives Matter and the growing movement for police reform across the country are not prioritizing residency requirements as part of their call for change. So what can police departments do to get that diverse police force, which is clearly an asset? Flowers, along with everyone else I spoke to for this story, said the real key is recruitment.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to OPD's fourth annual open house.
It's a sunny spring afternoon, and the Oakland Police are hosting their annual Open House Street Fair. Oakland Police Sergeant Mildred Oliver is at a table promoting the Police Activities League and the Explorers Program. Both are efforts to expose children to police officers and what they do, in hopes that one day some of those homegrown kids might want to join the force.
We are really truly trying to recruit people, an agency that's being run by the people, for the people of Oakland.
Oliver has been a cop for 18 years. She's born and raised here and is part of that 9% of the force that lives in the city.
I'm not saying that only Oaklanders can understand Oaklanders, but it gives us more credibility as a department when we can say that we go out in the community and recruit and we grow our own.
Oakland used to have a residency requirement. But in 1974, California legislators amended the state's constitution, making the geographic restrictions illegal. All of a sudden, cities and counties had to allow officers to live wherever they wanted. Today, some of Oakland's police officers live more than 100 miles away. I wanted to ask Officer Stone, Oakland born and raised, how he felt about law enforcement commuting in from the suburbs or further patrolling his hometown. Stone is also Black and understands the racial dynamics at play. So I was really surprised when he told me that the city of Oakland is no longer where he calls home.
I do not live here anymore.
Okay.
Moved out. I got tired of seeing people that I've arrested at my house, in front of my house.
Okay.
Gets... Now that I have a wife, I have three kids. Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't want to see those guys. I don't want there to be any trail back to my home where I sleep.
Stone's growing family was a major part of the decision.
I've been followed home before. It's just, it's a little frightening. And as soon as my wife and I, we were able to get everything straight as far as finances, we got out.
So, like more than 90% of his colleagues, Stone moved to the suburbs.
No drama, hardly any traffic. You know, it's one of those streets where if you don't know where it is, it's kind of hard to drive down it. Which is great, because there's kids playing outside, and everybody's got their kids on bicycles, and there's... It's just, it's peaceful, which is good.
Raising kids in a safe neighborhood with good schools is cited by many officers as to why they don't want to live in the inner city. Cost of living is also a big deal. In Oakland, the price of housing has risen so much in the last decade, it can be out of reach even for relatively well-paid police.
If police officers don't want to live in the city that they're working in, I think we have a very crisis and serious situation.
Criminologist John Penny says the quality of life justification only exacerbates the divide between police and urban communities.
First of all, if you're a police officer, you don't want to live here in the city, and the people that you are supposed to be protecting, then how do you think they feel about you in terms of your attitude towards the city? Would you want to go to a hospital where the doctors and nurses say, I would never use this hospital? We want to be safe as well, so we want them to live here, to share our way of life.
But despite calls for more local hiring, there's no real movement to overturn California's state law banning residency requirements. That's just fine with Officer Stone.
It's a silly rule to say you must live in Oakland or you must live in San Francisco to be a San Francisco police officer, or you must live in Concord to be a Concord police officer. Why? Because if I move outside the city limits, I won't be able to do this job as effectively as somebody who lives within the city limits? That's crap. If that would have been a stipulation when I was hired, I wouldn't be here. I'd be working for some place that didn't have that rule. And they'd have lost out on a good guy.